Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
We've been talking all week about the politicians and scientists gathered in Scotland to roll back emissions and save the planet from catastrophic climate change. But what about the artists?
This stuff is happening geologically in a blink of an eye, but in human terms, too long to think about.
Novelist Omar El Akkad says fiction can make an abstract threat real.
To try and say, hey, listen, care about someone who's not you. Is that going to work against the massive tide of an incredibly individualistic society that we've created? I don't know. But fundamentally, I have to believe that it might.
We'll hear more from El Akkad later, but first, Kim Stanley Robinson. He's one of the most prominent science fiction authors of our time. He's written about climate change for decades in books like New York 2140, Red Mars, and most recently, The Ministry for the Future. It's about a UN agency taking great risks to solve the climate crisis. His writing made such an impact that he was invited to the UN Climate Conference this week. Kim Stanley Robinson joins us now on Skype. Welcome. And first, I'd just like to know why you've spent so many years thinking about this topic.
Well, I'm a science fiction writer. And so what I mean by that is I like to set my stories in the future because it makes for interesting stories. So you set a story in the future. Well, it could be 5 million years in the future, and that's what we think of as space opera. There's near future science fiction. Mm-hmm. And what I'm going to say is that all near future science fiction has now become climate fiction, because it's an overdetermining situation that you can't escape. So if you're going to write about the near future, suddenly you're writing climate fiction now.
It's so interesting that you say that, because as I read The Ministry for the Future, I was very much struck by the first chapter, set just a few years from now, with a heat wave that kills millions of people in India. And it felt so relevant and timely, considering, you know, the headlines that we've been seeing all summer. Do you think that we're going to hit a point like this when a single disaster sort of wakes up the world to climate change?
I'm not so sure about that, to tell you the truth. And my working method was that if I could tell people about it in a fiction, they might become aware that it's going to happen, and it could happen almost anywhere. And this wet bulb temperature that is a combination of heat and humidity, which is what I described in my novel, one of the hottest wet bulb temperatures ever was recorded outside of Chicago. And The scientific community warning us of that kind of coalesced about 2 or 3 or 4 years ago. And when I read about it, I thought, I have to take this on. It's not well enough known that we cannot adapt to higher global average temperatures, because we don't even survive without air conditioning in a wet bulb 35 temperature, and we're already hitting wet bulb 34. It could happen anywhere, anytime. Most of the human world is in danger of heat waves of this sort. And so that really drove this particular book, yes.
That fictional heat wave that you write about in India forces fundamental political and, of course, scientific changes around the world. I wonder, as a science fiction writer, what kind of scientific innovations to combat the climate crisis most interest you?
The crucial one is finance, which is to say the software of civilization. How do we pay ourselves to quickly do the right things to decarbonize, as opposed to continuing to pay ourselves to destroy the earth for the generations to come and drive ourselves into a mass extinction event merely because it seems to be profitable by the current system. So a new political economy, a new sense of what money is and how we create it and what we spend it on, this is the crucial technology.
So tell me more about what this economic upheaval would look like, this economy 2.0 that would you know, potentially help us stave off disaster.
My pleasure to try. The way it is now, investment capital goes to the highest rate of return. In other words, bad things can happen and still make a profit. So the highest rate of return, if you wanted to make that for good things, people are talking about carbon quantitative easing. So the original making of money in the first place by the central banks would be like the quantitative easing of 2008 or 2020, would be spent first on decarbonization and then circulate in the general economy. The other notion that people have been discussing is that if you were to sequester carbon or draw carbon down, that you would be paid for it with what they call a carbon coin. Like they used to have a gold standard. In this case, there would be a carbon standard. You get paid for doing the good work rather than the false highest rate of return that's wrecking the earth.
More traditional scientific advancements that you write about in this book include India, in response to this heat wave, releasing sulfuric acid into the atmosphere to try to deflect the sun's heat. And you know what? I just recently read an article in the newspaper about that. So some of the things you write about maybe sound a little bit outlandish, but they're actually theoretically very possible.
I'm actually behind the curve of the real events. Now, solar radiation management is highly controversial. It's sometimes called geoengineering. It looks like a bad idea, and that's because in many ways it is a bad idea. But it's an emergency gesture to lower temperatures by imitating a volcanic eruption. Sulfur dioxide is actually very bad for the ozone layer, but if you put more inert dust up there, like limestone dust, which is up there already, and you deflect some sunlight away, suddenly temperatures would drop for a while, the dust would fall to the ground, and then you might do it again, you might not. It's being discussed. People are saying, well, how do we govern it? How do we decide to do it? How do we make sure that some mad billionaire doesn't do it on his own? And it is not a wild science fiction story. It is a current reality that we might need everything we can possibly do to avoid mass death.
You also write about eco-terrorism, or people resorting to very serious violence to stop polluters like oil producers, airlines, industrial ag. Give me your thoughts on that. Do you get the sense that that's where we're headed?
I hope not. I think it's a terrible idea. I think every time people decide to use violence against other humans to get their political will, the backlash is more intense than the original action. I'm a middle-class American pacifist, but I, when I'm writing that novel, I thought there's going to be people a lot angrier than me who've seen their families die. So it's such an obvious and bad possibility that what I was hoping that was by portraying it fictionally, I might give people pause and think, well, we really ought to do the right thing first to avoid these bad things happening.
Look, you're, of course, not the only author writing climate fiction. We spoke to the novelist Omar El-Akkad, and he said that climate fiction, or cli-fi, isn't actually a new genre, and that it needs to be recognized by the wider literary world. Let's listen to that.
Something that contends with the fundamental irrationality of being human. That, to me, is what literature is. And climate change is such a concrete example of that, in the sense that we know what we are doing to ruin this planet and our ability to survive in it. We know what we need to do to fix it, and we do nothing. The fundamental irrational human behavior at the heart of that is, to me, such a magnet for what literature is. So I think over time, that idea of cli-fi, or whatever you want to call it, being a new, strange thing is going to fade away, and you're not really going to have sort of cli-fi books. You're going to have any writer worth their salt having to contend with the climate.
What do you think? Do writers increasingly have an obligation to address this?
Yes. Literature exists to give our lives meaning. It's the stories we tell each other, and literature is the finest stories we have. And I totally agree. Omar is right about this, that all fiction that is about reality, that is a kind of realism of our time, will become climate fiction by default, because that's the overriding reality of the next few decades. And fiction that tries to pretend that it's all about your individual problems without getting to the social and the planetary is a diminished form and not doing its job.
So considering that, do you think that through your work you can reach a new audience, or raise awareness in a way that, say, environmental activists or politicians haven't been able to?
Well, that's a good question. I think there is a percentage of the public that reads novels to find out what their life means. Those people are going to be appreciating the fiction that includes the planet and the climate emergency, because it'll help to orient them to what do I do as an individual? How does life feel? What does it mean? These are traditional questions of fiction that are inescapable. If you try to escape it, you render yourself irrelevant as an artist. If you try to face up to it, you've got a whole bundle of formal problems, like how do you write the planet? How do you describe how it feels to be in that a climate emergency is on the other side of the Earth, but not on your side of the Earth, and so on and so forth.
You know, finally, Kim Stanley Robinson, before I let you go, I was surprised by how hopeful your book about environmental catastrophe ends up being. In fact, it ends at a COP conference where the headline is essentially that we figured it out, humanity solved it. Do you think that's possible? Can we really change course?
Yes. We are not doomed. It's a question of better or worse. If we react sooner and we react better as a global society, you can stabilize carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere, and you can even begin to draw them down. And at that point, you've dodged the mass extinction event that we are beginning. And so for me, as a utopian science fiction writer, the bar has been lowered to this. If we dodge a mass extinction event and allow the future generations to cope with the subsequent ongoing problems that will always exist, that will be a utopian 21st century, and we can do it.
Kim Stanley Robinson is author of The Ministry for the Future. He takes a look at the crisis of a warming planet through fiction. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.